For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Welcome back, everyone, for episode 75 of the Deep Drive Pod. It has been a while since we've recorded, but thankfully, not too many big. There hasn't really been any league-breaking shifts or you know, players going to new places in terms of like the top free agents. No Judge signing. No top shortstop signing. But there is still the awards. There are still, you know, free agency has begun, and there have been some trades that have gone down. So, you know, we'll kind of get into it. We'll start off with awards, I guess, since those are kind of the, we'll go in like chronological order here. Awards are kind of the big thing we didn't get to cover when it occurred. But, you know, I think for the most part, these awards, I don't know of a specific, like, really terrible, you know, voting. You know, there's usually like one or two every year where you're like, where, how the hell did we get this as the MVP or the Cy Young or the Rookie of the Year? And I feel like for the most part, they did a really good job with the awards. You know, we can get into, you know, maybe the NL MVP, but that's what, like a 0.1, 0.2, you know, within the margin of error for wins above replacement. And Goldschmidt was just so good offensively that you can chalk it up to that. And as for, you know, the Rookie of the Year for the AL and the NL, you know, you could have gone either way, I think, for the NL and gotten a right answer. For the American League, I don't think it's terrible to say that Adley could have won it, but Julio Rodriguez played the full season. So I don't have any quarrels with the awards. I don't know if you do, James, but I feel like I am okay with how, I'm happy with how the awards turned out. I think this was, they did a great job.
Yeah, so Jack's not here, and I know he would have a major problem with the NL Manager of the Year award. But I don't think any of them are really that bad. I would have given it to Machado instead of Goldschmidt or Arenado. I think Goldschmidt should have finished third. But that's not really a major issue. It's nothing egregious, which is rare given the precedents that they've set. You know, a 2020 AL MVP comes to mind as one of the worst ones. But, you know, usually... I don't remember, was there one last year that we were like, this guy didn't deserve it? I'm not sure, but I'd say awards, they went pretty well. Michael Harris Jr. winning it over Spencer Strider, I don't know if I fully agree with it, but I don't hate it. Like, it's not awful. And I think you can kind of say that about everything. Maybe Brandon Hyde deserved the Manager of the Year award, but at the same time, the Guardians were no one expected them to be a playoff team, and then they made it, you know, pretty far. So I don't have a problem with that either. I'm not sure about you.
Yeah, I'd say like really the only one that you could look at, you know, I mean, not even the only one you could look at and kind of question. I don't think there was a single one I would question here too much. In terms of like last year, you can say, you know, there were legitimate like Cy Young debates.
I would have done Wheeler. Last year, I would have voted for Wheeler, but I don't think, again, that's similar to this Machado and Goldschmidt thing where it's like, you know, I would have voted for Wheeler instead of Burns, but it's not a problem that Burns won it. It's not like he didn't deserve to win it.
So, you know, ultimately, I think voting, at least in comparison to years past and like, you know, we go back 10 years, there are probably more discrepancies. And that's obviously due to us having more data now and being able to look back and say, hey, you know, this guy had more war, you know, this guy should have won it. And I imagine that for the foreseeable future, we'll see, you know, the right guys win awards more likely than not. You know, for gold gloves, I know that there's going to be some debate, but also defensive statistics are also kind of, you know, are you a DRS guy, an outs above average guy? You know, that's a whole other complex debate that we don't really have a clear answer to. And for Manager of the Year with Francona, I still feel like, I mean, I said Kevin Cash should have won it. I didn't think he was going to. I still stand by the idea that Kevin Cash should be like perennially at least in the top three. But, you know, reevaluating things, Brandon Hyde probably should have won that award just because if you look at, like, projected wins and then where they ended up at, I'm pretty sure Brandon Hyde by a landslide had the biggest gap in that regard in terms of, you know, most wins above projected. Or I don't know if that I'm trying to like kind of word it in the way that makes sense. But I don't have a problem with Francona winning it. I have no problem with, you know, a guy who takes a team that, as you mentioned, very young, very inexperienced, tons of rookies, and, you know, going on and winning an American League Central that I think everyone would have said it's either the White Sox or maybe the Twins winning it. I don't think many people gave Cleveland or you know, the Tigers got a lot of hype that I didn't think they deserved. But if there was a third team in that division that people were hyping up, it was the Tigers. So, you know, credit to the Guardians, credit to Francona. I don't necessarily think Francona's the best decision maker when it comes to bullpen decisions or lineup moves, but those things tend to be very marginal, and we can't really quantify the effect of a manager on a clubhouse and kind of that leadership aspect to things. But I think that'll wrap up awards. I mean, I think we kind of are in agreement with a lot of how things were selected. So, you know, I don't know if you want to dabble in the World Series or just go straight into free agency. But, you know, one of the biggest keys to that Astros World Series is Justin Verlander, who's a free agent. You have DeGrom. You have plenty of great starters. Kodai Senga from, I don't know if I pronounced his first name right.
How do you spell it? Kodai?
I think it's Kodai. Kodai? Okay.
Normally you pronounce the I, but either way, he's probably like, I mean, where would you rank him against all the other free agent starters? He's got to be pretty high.
It depends. So I think I'm going to put him in like the tier with like Eovaldi and Bassett, or like those guys that you could get all-star production from, perhaps.
I don't know. I think he's probably better than both of those guys.
I don't know. Just because, so shout out to, I got to figure out how to pronounce his last name, but on Twitter, his at is Lance Bro or Lance Bra. Yes. Lance Bra, excuse me. So he released a video where he kind of detailed a lot of the pitch metrics, like vertical break, horizontal break, stuff plus for Senga's arsenal. And he was talking, you know, about how Senga's fastball actually only got a 17% swing and miss rate in Japan, which is lower than that 22% league average mark for Major League Baseball. The balls are smaller over there. They're pre-tacked. It's a little bit, you know, harder to generate a vertical break at the major league level because of the baseballs in comparison to Japan. So there are some issues with spin efficiency or spin rates that sometimes can occur. But it's the splitter, the fork ball or, you know, off speed. It's called the ghost fork that happens to be his best pitch at a 60% swing and miss rate. The slider's all right. The slider's pretty good. It grades out above average and stuff. Plus the cutter is a meh pitch, but it's, I don't know how Senga translates in year one. I don't know if Senga's like, I think Senga's very clearly, a project pitcher. I think he needs a year at the major league level to kind of develop a little bit. So I don't know if I can necessarily call him the better than Eovaldi, because I kind of know what I'm going to get from him. I feel like, or even better than Bassett, just because I kind of know what I'm going to get from those two, which is above average major league production. And I'm not certain Senga can give me that in 2023. I think he can in 2024, but I'm a little concerned.
I mean, I don't know if
Senga.
can you really make that argument that, you know, you trust a guy in 24, but not 23 when he's already 29 years old. It's like this guy is, you know, going to change that much. Maybe there's a little adjustment period in April or May, but I don't think it's going to be like a full season thing. Especially the teams that are interested in him. I've seen a lot of names go around, but I've seen the Mets. I've seen the Cubs. I think the Giants. So they're all pretty big market teams, which kind of leads you to believe that he's going to be in for a pretty big contract, maybe even 4 to 5 years, but I'm not sure.
I mean, it's weird because, again, we're trying to project the player stuff-wise, how they'll translate to the major league level, and that's extremely difficult, especially since we're talking about different baseballs, different run environment. Again, he could also, like, he doesn't use his splitter that much, even though he probably should use it around 20% of the time. If he increases it to 30% usage and cuts the fastball from 44% to, like, under, like what Ohtani did with his slider and fastball, he used his slider as his primary pitch, and his fastball kind of became, took a backseat to that pitch. That's kind of inherently a way to make yourself better. It could just be a pitch usage thing. I think he mentioned he wants to go to a very analytically minded team, if I'm not mistaken. I think that was a report I saw, right?
It says that he's versed in or wants to learn more, at least in the tweet that I think that's the same one as you saw.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, obviously he's a really hard throwing pitcher. Like for a starter, I think he's run it up above 100.
Yeah, he's hit, I think, 101 point something. It rounds up to 102, so it has to be like 101.6789, something like that.
Yeah, so I mean, obviously that'll translate. Like the velocity will definitely translate. That's nothing to be concerned about. Which sometimes is an issue. This is more so something that we say about the Asian hitters, whether it's Korea or Japan, where they're coming from. But when they come from the KBO or NPB, a lot of the times it's like, oh, can they hit fastballs? Because, you know, they're not seeing fastballs as fast.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, with him throwing, like, a lot of the pitchers who come over from Korea and Japan don't throw 102. They're, like, finesse guys who throw 90, 93. But he doesn't really fit in that mold. Obviously, neither does Shohei Ohtani. But we've seen Ohtani have success at the major league level. And I think Senga's stats are pretty similar to Ohtani's pitching-wise. Obviously, he's 10 years older or whatever than Ohtani was when he came over, because Ohtani was, what, 20, 21?
Yeah, Ohtani was – I think he was older than that, right?
Or was he 23? I'm not sure, but I know he's a lot younger.
He was 23 his first season, so yes, he was significantly younger.
So Senga's 29, he'll be 30, so it's a 7-year difference. I mean, obviously, he's going to want to go to a contender. I'm reading that too. So, I don't know. Maybe I think the Mets make sense. The Padres make sense. Yankees make sense. Like, I don't think there's a team that couldn't use him, especially given that, you know, if you think you can, kind of unlock him, I guess, or figure out how to help him translate to the major league level, you can get one of those high-end arms for a pretty decent price, I feel like.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, you know, there is, like, the upside here, it's just a matter of the thing, again, that concerns me is the lack of swings and misses on the fastball. The velocity is great. Great run on the fastball. It gets, you know, 12 inches of horizontal run, 17 inches of vertical break, which is really good. It's just is also his delivery. So the way he delivers the baseball is very up down. So it's not deceptive at all. Batters kind of expect that rising fastball kind of effect because of his delivery. It's very over the top. So the one thing is too, though, that because he gets a lot of vertical break on his fastball and because his forkball drops a lot, there's 16 inches of vertical separation. So there's going to be a lot of swings and misses generated at the major league level. Maybe it's a matter of perhaps the location of his fastball was a problem too. Maybe he's not being aggressive enough up in the zone. We don't really know these things. So, you know, why he's getting a low swinging strike rate swing and miss rate could be something that a team figures out. Also with TrackMan over there, it's not nearly as consistent at the major league level as the major league one. So perhaps when a team gets to look at him, they'll be able to, you know, kind of figure it out from there. At some point, you know, having an elite pitch at that forkball and having remarkable velocity, you'll buy high on that any day of the week. And you mentioned there's a lot of suitors. I don't know if they're all going to necessarily bid themselves into ridiculous contracts just because there's a lot of uncertainty with his game because it's, you know, overseas. So you don't really, the data you're getting on him isn't, you know, what you usually are supposed to be getting for a free agent. And then the uncertainty of whether he'll translate or not. Are we going to see a massive contract? Probably not. And I think that'll entice a lot of teams who are trying to have a big offseason. I really do think the Mets are a great fit here because they may want to get Senga and then they want to go out and shop at the top of the free agent market. That just makes a lot of sense for them. They don't have to pay the qualifying offer as well, the pick for the qualifying offer as well, which is going to be a big incentive for a lot of teams to push for Senga. I think it comes down to San Diego or the Mets. I would like to see him on the Yankees because I'm a Yankees fan, but I don't think it's happening. Maybe Boston, but I think it's San Diego or the Mets at this point.
I mean, yeah, I mean, the Cubs are also in there as they're kind of in with everyone. I think the Giants are also going to be trying to have a huge offseason. So I don't know. I think any of those four teams, I wouldn't be surprised. Also, Boston. Again, I'm listing a lot of teams here. I don't think you can say like San Diego or the Mets. I think it's a little too early for that, especially given, you know, what we, you know, with other free agents, more, you know, obvious, like it seems. It seems like we know for sure at this point that the Cubs are going to make a splash with a shortstop. It seems pretty much inevitable. And then with Judge, it's basically down to two teams, with the Yankees and Giants. I guess the Mets are in there, but I'm not sure. There was a whole issue with that report.
I want to clarify. I don't think it's just down to those two. If I'm taking a guess at this point, I'll say it's one of those two. But as you mentioned, yeah, we can't know for a while. But I'm interested to see. And I guess the other, Japanese player that we're going to be introduced to in the 2022 season or 2023 season is Masataka Yoshida, who I believe the Yankees, Phillies, Mariners, and Red Sox. Are those the four teams I remember being involved in that? There has to be more, maybe. But those are the four I remember off the top of my head that have, like, connections, reported connections to Yoshida. I think he's going to be, like, the high contact, league average to slightly below league average power. And if things work out, he should be, like, a 300 hitter with a high OBP and slugs, you know, 460, and is, like, a top of the lineup type of guy. I think he's clearly not better than Seiya Suzuki as a talent. I think Seiya Suzuki, you know, the upside there, because he's also younger, is like he goes out, he puts up like a 135 WRC plus, and it's 30 plus.
Yeah, but I do think the one thing that we didn't realize about Seiya Suzuki last year when we were looking at him, and maybe this is something that he'll figure out, is that his defense is not good. It's really bad. He plays right field and he can't defend out there. He's probably a DH, to be honest.
I was talking more about the bat.
He had a decent year at the plate, 116 WRC plus, but you know, he could go out and, you know, he's projected by Steamer to hit 128 next year, which would obviously be a huge step up, and I'm sure he'll stick. Like, he has the type of skills that will translate pretty much no matter what. You know, good bat to ball skills, good walk rate, you know, stuff like that, that you can kind of look at as things that won't change with the style of pitching that he's seeing. Obviously, we know that Suzuki coming into next year is going to be one of the starting outfielders, so he'll get a shot. I just think Senga probably, given that Suzuki's such a bad defender, I don't know. I feel like Senga's probably a better prospect.
I meant Yoshida versus Suzuki.
Oh.
Yeah, no. I wasn't going to compare a pitcher with a hitter.
I was confused about that at first. But Yoshida, I think, what's He's his good. Last name?
It's Masataka Yoshida. That's his first last name.
Masataka.
The problem is his defense isn't supposed to be very good as well. So that's like, either way I view it is like, if his defense is also bad, I'm taking Suzuki's bat. And I'm not saying this to like put down Yoshida. I really like Yoshida, but just kind of like looking at what a potential contract would look like, I think he's going to get less than Suzuki did just based on the hype.
But he's way younger.
Suzuki? No. Yoshida's almost 30.
I think we're talking about different players.
Yes, we're probably talking about different players. I'm talking about Masataka Yoshida. I'm pretty sure he's turning.
Oh, he's 29. Yeah. Okay, he's turning, I was 30, looking at. I was thinking of someone else. Let's see who I was thinking of. I was thinking of another pitcher. Yamamoto.
He's good. I think he's gonna get. He's pretty good, but
because he's younger, he's 23.
Yeah, he's a young kid. I think he'll be someone we'll see later, but that's not this year. That's a discussion for a podcast in a while from now. But like,
yeah, for sure.
For Masataka Yoshida, like, it depends on how, like, as you mentioned, the defense for Suzuki was terrible, but his arm is really good. So maybe it's just a matter of the range is terrible, but maybe it's a matter of like getting comfortable out there. I don't really know. For Yoshida, I think if you got, say, a Suzuki OPS or WRC plus and then not horrific off defense, I think a team would be very happy with the production they're going to get from him, especially as someone who I think is going to translate more in that OBP category and less in the slugging department. So as a top of the lineup type of guy, that could work. You know, again, the tools just aren't as impressive as Suzuki's was. Suzuki
and
was
even
like,
not just the tools, also the stats. Like, Suzuki was putting up 1100 OPSs every year in Japan, and Yoshida's at what, 960, 980, which obviously isn't, obviously not bad. Like, you'll take that, but I don't know.
The way I look at it, though, is Yoshida's going to put up some ridiculously low swinging strike rates. He'll be a pest for a team at the top of the lineup, and that's valuable. I think that's something that some teams definitely can use in the postseason. So I think he'll have a good market. I think if I'm like just looking at it from the perspective of as a Yankee fan, I would rather the Yankees sign Yoshida than Senga, because the alternative is Benintendi, who I like, but that's your only alternative probably. You know, you can go a lot of different directions in the pitching market. But again, you probably have to sacrifice a qualifying offer at this point if you want to get a top flight arm, unless you're getting Verlander, right? I think everyone else, you know, Eovaldi, Rodon, Bassett, DeGrom all have qualifying offers attached to them. So you either make a trade or you sign Verlander, and that's the only way to kind of avoid giving up draft picks. But I think that we're going to get two good Japanese players coming up to the major level, which is fun to see. But then kind of the rest of this free agent class, I guess I've been talking about pitchers for a little bit. So I'm curious as to what DeGrom gets, because I think we can agree Jacob DeGrom is on a – like. If everyone's on the mound at the same time healthy, Jacob DeGrom's the best pitcher in that crop. I don't think that's a discussion, right? But is Jacob DeGrom, because of his injuries, going to pitch enough to produce value worth $40 million a year? And for how many years are you comfortable giving him $40 million a year? Because you can say, well, if he's healthy in October, you can't guarantee that. Right?
Borderline guarantee you he won't be.
It's weird. You're taking a risk. But the upside is you have the best. Like, the upside is you have the best pitcher in baseball, and he'll put up a historic season, fully healthy. That's the upside. And you know, that is like, he could. I mean, think about it. With his stuff right now, he could go out and post like an 8-WAR season in 160, 170 innings type stuff. Like, not 8-WAR, maybe 7-WAR. 7-WAR, I think, is a little more realistic for a high, for like a very ideal outcome here. I mean, he's remarkable. There's no other way to put it, right? There really isn't. But
I feel like all these rumors just seem like smoke and mirrors to me. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, but I can't see a scenario where he's not a Met next year.
Can see a scenario where his medicals aren't the best and the Mets pivot for Verlander because they don't, and they get a, I could see it, because if you're the Mets, you won 100 games last season and you did it largely without the contributions of DeGrom. However, on the contrary, on the flip side, you get swept without DeGrom. So it's a weird situation. I agree in the sense that if the Mets
like you're saying, if he was healthy in October, he was healthy in October.
Yeah.
Obviously, he wasn't healthy up to that point. But he turned it a great start in game two. He's the reason you won that game. I don't know. I think they bring him back.
I think the one thing that I agree with you with in terms of like the rumors, I think it's BS that a team is going to just blow the Mets offer out of the water. I think
if the Mets want DeGrom back, they'll
get
DeGrom
him back. Yeah.
It's just a matter of whether they're willing to pay him or not. No team is going to outbid the Mets for anyone. And I don't think anyone, like, even Judge, if the Mets want Judge, they'll get Judge.
But the thing is, they'd have to, the problem is, I think the problem boils down to how badly the Mets want DeGrom. And like, I don't know. I don't know the situation with the Mets' desire for DeGrom. I don't know how badly they want him. I don't know. But as you mentioned, like, they can get anyone on this market. They are going to be involved in every top free agent on the market. And, you know, just like people said, they had no shot at Scherzer. You know, they had a shot at Scherzer because they have money. So it'll be interesting to see where they go from there. But I think DeGrom, I'm going to say, I guess I'll put him staying with the Mets, but I'm not going to really do a heavy prediction there. For Verlander, where do you think he goes? Because do you think the Astros are going to be as inclined? Do you think they're going to be inclined to give him what he wants?
I don't think they can let him go. I know.
Interesting.
I know they have like a lot of pitchers, obviously. And Brown, I think, is really good. So I think if they, under the circumstances, they do lose Verlander, I don't think it's that big of a downgrade to have Valdez as your ace. And then obviously, you like your, from Verlander to your five starters, a pretty big difference. But it's not like, the other thing about Houston is I think if they lose out on Verlander, they'll probably just go sign, you know, some middle tier guy. Like, I don't know why. I just have like a sneaking suspicion that they might sign a guy like Noah Syndergaard and turn him into Justin Verlander. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Not like, obviously not.
Right.
Into
no.
Justin Verlander, but like do a similar thing where, you know, Verlander looked like his career was kind of over and they kind of, they fixed him. Right. I definitely think that's, I think Syndergaard is fixable. And I think that in the right scenario that could happen, I think Houston might be that place. I just don't know if, you know, the Astros have not shown any sort of loyalty to their stars in the same way that a lot of other typical big market teams in, you know, this like dynasty type of mindset, right? Like it's not very often that your team gets into their franchises in the mindset that like you are a dynasty and you want to keep it together. But the Astros don't even seem to think like that right now. They're like, they let Correa go, they let Springer go, and they're still winning titles. Is Verlander just the next one? Probably. He probably is. So maybe, you know, New York, either team for Verlander makes sense. I could see him with the Dodgers. I could see him basically any big market team with championship hopes. I think Seattle would be fun, but I don't know if they'll be able to do that or be willing to do that.
I don't think it'll be Seattle. I think it'll be the Dodgers. The Dodgers clean up a lot of salary. There's interest there. Obviously, I mean, I imagine I'm going to just go out because I know that the comparison I'm going to use, I have to like put a lot of heavy pretense of, I don't think the contract will play out the same, but the contract they gave to Bauer, I think that'll be the exact same situation with Verlander. They're going to give him a 3-year deal, high AAV. They like doing this. They like giving out those short-term high AV deals because they can afford it, and they don't like to pay players for a very long time because they like to work through 3-year windows. Obviously, I imagine the contract doesn't play out the way Bauer's did. I just want to clarify that. But you get what I'm saying, right? You know, pitcher who's going to get a lot of money on a short-term deal, the Dodgers kind of arise and go out and get him. They are a team that could use, they kind of need a front line, you know, they've always had great pitching in the past. I feel like, you know, they lost Anderson. They're going to lose Heaney. Well, maybe they won't lose Heaney, but you know, he's a free agent.
But they already lost Anderson.
I said that. Yeah.
Oh, okay. They're going to lose him.
No, I meant Heaney. They might lose Heaney, but he's a free agent. As for, you know, Dustin May, Tony Gonsolin, you know, these are guys that you don't really know if you're going to get a full season out of. Bueller's coming off Tommy John. Urias is your workhorse. You know Urias is going to give you a lot of innings and give you quality innings as well. I feel like going out and getting a guy like Verlander, a lot of innings, great production, still going to be playing behind a great defense, still going to be playing for a great organization analytically. I think that just makes a ton of sense. A fly ball pitcher in Dodger Stadium compared to Houston. I mean, Houston's a bandbox, so I imagine that Verlander isn't going to have any ballpark issues. So I think it's a good fit there. I think that's what ends up happening. I don't think the Yankees are going to, I think the Mets could also be that team, but I don't think the Yankees are going to be doing that. Just, I don't think the Yankees are allocating $40 million a year to a starting pitcher. Even though I think they should be a team that does stuff like that. I don't think they will. They have to sign Judge. So, there's that. You mentioned that you have,
do they have to sign Judge?
Yes, absolutely has to. Absolutely have to. Their outfield's terrible. It's Cabrera.
No, I'm not saying like, do they have to? I'm just saying, will they?
Like, yes, I think they have to. I mean, they like financially, you have to remove the Judge's chambers. The chase for 62 gave them record views for Yes Network. The stadium was rocking in meaningless September games because of Aaron Judge. Like, the Yankees need Aaron Judge. They need this guy. Financially, he is a big part of what they do. They can generate revenue without him, but it will not be the same as it was last year without Aaron Judge. And quite frankly, he's your best player. He's homegrown. There's no reason to not have him on your team next year. I think it'd be insane for the Yankees to not sign him. You know, you could say, well, they could sign Correa and they could do this and that, but that your outfield's still going to be dog shit. Your outfield's Cabrera, Bader, and it's Hicks, Cabrera, and Bader. It's not a good outfield. It's not a good outfield. It's an outfield. This is a team that will finish in third place if they don't have Aaron Judge, unless they do something crazy, like insane. But I don't foresee that happening. So have to sign Judge. I don't think it's 100% chance, obviously, but they absolutely need to. You mentioned Syndergaard. Syndergaard's actually working with Tread Athletics. And if you guys aren't aware, you know, Mitch Keller was a guy who was a big velocity uptick, and he had the best ERA minus of his career last season. He worked with Tread Athletics. He went from a guy throwing in the low 90s to a guy who could hit 99, 100 miles an hour. Syndergaard's someone who's coming off of a season where he had lowered velocity. His sinker still had a negative 12 run value, which is really good, but it averaged under 94 miles an hour. Could we see Syndergaard potentially go out and add a couple ticks to his fastball? If he's sitting 94, 95 next season, throwing a little bit of a harder slider, could he be a more effective starter? Absolutely. I think the Astros could go out and get a guy like Eovaldi, though. I do think, you know, Eovaldi's another guy. He had diminishing velocity coming off of an injury. He's a guy who I think has much better stuff than Syndergaard does. I think the floor for Eovaldi is, if he's sitting 95, he's still better than Syndergaard is sitting 93. So the upside is Eovaldi's throwing like 96, 97. And could you imagine Anthony Eovaldi with the Houston Astros pitching staff or pitching development? Like,
oh, it would be
ridiculous velocity or regardless his VAA.
And not just velocity, his ridiculous stuff in general. Yeah.
Like the pitch, I mean, his splitter's amazing. His curveballs are remarkable. He has to add some of his vertical drop back on his sinker, slider. But the splitter's great, curveball's great, fastball velocity. If it comes back, it'll be a great pitch again. I think that's like a very good fit, actually. The only problem is they'll have to sacrifice draft picks, and I don't know if they're willing to do that. So maybe they're more likely to sign a guy like Syndergaard, or maybe they just bring back Verlander. Crane is kind of crazy when it comes to money sometimes. So maybe he's just crazy enough to do it, right? Maybe that crazy son of a bitch is willing to give Verlander the money he's asking for. Or maybe the market just kind of says, no one's offering you $40 million, Verlander. So he's going to bring his price down a little bit. We'll see. But, you know,
I don't know about that. I feel like someone will offer him $40 million.
Oh, I agree. But I think
he's definitely worth $40 million. He's won the Cy Young 2 years in a row. I saw, like, obviously not 2 years in a row, but 2 seasons that he's played in a row. Obviously missed 2020 with the injury and 2021. But, you know, he's a guy who's... The question coming into this year was whether he'd be able to return to form after the injury, and he did. So I don't know what you could say against him. Like, he's 40, but he's been old.
Yeah, I guess
5 years.
Yeah, no, I don't have a problem with paying him $40 million. I just don't know. Like, I don't know. I think it'll be like either the Mets or the Dodgers, maybe the Astros, but I don't see. I think it's going to very much be like the Max Scherzer market, where it was a battle between the Dodgers and the Mets at the end. It'll be a battle between maybe two or three teams towards the end, after kind of Verlander withers down, the team's not willing to go to that extra mile to get him. I think you could argue the top pitching option on the free agent market is Carlos Rodon. You could argue that. He's one of the younger options on the market. He had a second ridiculous season where he was arguably better than he was in his 2021 breakout year. I don't know where he goes, quite frankly, because every team could use a Carlos Rodon. It would make sense for almost every team to sign Rodon. I think we're going to see not a lucrative AAV. I think we're going to see a deal kind of similar, maybe a little bit better than Gausman's deal, somewhere in that range. Do we like what team like the Red Sox could use Rodon? They could definitely use Rodon. The Yankees could use Rodon. The Blue Jays could use Rodon. The Orioles could use Rodon. The Angels could use Rodon. The Astros, if they lose Verlander, could use Rodon. Seattle. I mean, what team? I mean, maybe not Seattle as much, but they have great starting pitching. So
I mean, anyone could use him. He's
right.
He's gonna be like not super expensive and
right. And he's ridiculous. He's amazing. Like, how many teams? And I feel like he fits the bill of, like, he's not going to get crazy AAV. He's going to be like, there are teams you can list 10 teams that could reasonably afford him, minimum, right? I'm just going to go off the top here. Twins could afford him, and they should be able to get a guy like him. Blue Jays, Orioles, Red Sox, Yankees, Mets, Phillies, the Cardinals should be able to afford a guy like him, the Cubs. The Dodgers, the Giants, the Padres, right? Mariners, Astros, Rangers, right? Yeah, and these are teams that are realistically, you know, teams that could spend on pitching. So you can name half the league. So he's going to have a lot of suitors. It's going to come down to who he wants to play for, you know, how competitive these teams are, their offers, how willing they're going to be to lose a draft pick. I'm not as sure about Rodon. For DeGrom, I feel like if you say Texas or the Mets, I think you could go list Texas or the Mets are going to get him. You could say something like that. You could say for Verlander.
You think Texas?
For DeGrom?
I don't know if I really believe that.
You don't? Interesting. I mean,
I think Atlanta is a team in there for DeGrom. I don't know about Texas. It doesn't make sense to me why they would do that.
Well, they suck. But here's the thing. Okay. I'm going to look at projection standings right now.
How far is Josh Young? Is it Jung? I think it's Young.
I know how you spell it. I don't know how to pronounce it. So just to give you context here, the Orioles are projected to have a 49 win percentage and the Rangers at a 472. Are we convinced that the Rangers are so far off from competing that getting some starting pitching wouldn't help them? They're also a team that has Jonah Heim, great catcher, Nate Lowe, great first baseman, Simeon, great second baseman, Seager, great shortstop. Jung is someone I think he was supposed to be ready.
He played this year, but
he was hurt though,
shit.
If I'm not mistaken, right? Wasn't he? I think he came back from an injury, if I'm not mistaken. I could be completely wrong here, by the way. But you know, he's projected to be above average hitter. The defense is a little bit, you know, we don't know yet. I'm a little concerned because, as you mentioned, he wasn't as good, you know, at AAA. And at the age of 24, you're kind of pushing the point. He's going to be 25 in February, kind of pushing the point where you kind of need to know what you have. Their outfield needs desperate help. This is a team that should be looking at Aaron Judge. Absolutely should be looking at Aaron Judge. I think you have your outfield. Adolis Garcia is going to play a role in your outfield. They have Josh Smith listed as their starting left fielder. He was acquired in the Gallo deal. He was very unimpressive at the major level. He really couldn't hit for power. Though he did have a good walk rate. He did not strike out a lot. It was just bad though for everything else. The quality of contact was terrible. Though he is a good defender. He's bad at everything, offensively outside of being able to make contact and not chasing too much. They need outfielders. I think they could sign a guy like Conforto. If they're pitching, their projected offense, they're middle of the pack pitching wise. They are bottom of the barrel. They are a team that can improve. I think I really do view these guys as, you know, you have John Gray. I think he's pretty good. I think Martin Perez is an above average starter. If you get, you know, Rodon, if you're able to get a full season from Dane Dunning, who's probably a league average starter. If not a little bit better at times, he's a little bit new.
He's kind of
Okay. Wow. ERA minus was not great. Never mind. The bullpen needs help. They need help pitching wise. They just need pitchers. So if you're them, why not go out and get as much pitching as possible? You know what I mean? Why not splurge, make trades, do whatever you can because you need pitching. They have a lot of work to do. They are not there yet, but could they get there? Maybe. You know, it'll be interesting to see. As for like, you know, I think they're going to be aggressive. I do. I don't think they'll be getting Verlander. I don't think Verlander is going to go to Texas. I think he wants to win right now. I don't think he wants to be part of a rebuild.
Said that they're not part of a rebuild though. You were just arguing
they're still a year away, but they should be aggressive. Like they should go out and acquire pitching because they need pitching. And they should try to get better. You should try to get better because you've already you can get better and they're going to be entering a contention window soon. But Verlander's in a case where like he's going year to year for a guy. How do I put this? DeGrom's career most likely doesn't end in 3 years. Verlander's career could end in 2 years. If you get what I'm saying.
Right. For sure.
So it's a little bit, I think the pressure is a little bit different. I think Verlander is a little bit more like, man, I would really want to win. You know, like I really want to get as many World Series titles as possible, but who knows? So, moving off pitchers, we talked about Judge a little bit, you know, I think it'll go back to the Yankees. I don't know who else. I think the Giants are obviously interesting, but who exactly is the team that's going to blow you out of the water for that offer? The Mets haven't shown a lot of preliminary interest. The Dodgers haven't shown an ability to be willing to give out like these 7, 8, 9 year deals to, you know, aging guys. I think it'll be the Yankees. I could be wrong, I'm dying. Turner, Correa, Bogarts, there are a lot of shortstops on the market. I don't know where these guys go. The shortstops, Swanson as well, but Swanson's not as good as those guys. Where do you think this shortstop carousel kind of goes?
Correa, Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the most obvious one. I don't know. It just feels like that's what's going to happen. At least from what I've read, but I don't know. It could be anywhere, but I find it hard to imagine that the Cubs don't get any of them.
Yeah,
just given how active they've been. You know, they were active in the free agent shortstop market last year, stuck with, I think they got Andrelton Simmons, who sucks.
It also won't be Swanson. I'm going to guarantee. I think it'll be one of Bogarts.
It'll be the big ones. It's gonna be Correa, it's going to be Bogarts, or it's going to be Turner.
Right.
And I think if I'm ranking those in terms of likelihood, not in terms of how much I want them, but just in terms of like who I think in likelihood, it's Correa, Bogarts, Turner, Swanson.
I'm going to say it's Correa just because I think Correa is young enough that he can afford to wait a year.
I don't think they're that far. They're probably not a playoff team next year. And if they are a playoff team, certainly not a contender. But by 24, 25, right. I'm not surprised if they're, especially with Correa, if they're competing for, the NL. Because it looks like they're going to extend both Horner and Hab. Let Contreras walk, replace him, I think. So we'll see. But Correa, Chicago. Swanson, I think, back to Atlanta. I think Turner goes to Philadelphia. And Bogarts goes back to Boston. I don't know, though. Bogarts back to Boston is interesting because I don't know where else he would be needed or wanted.
One thing that's interesting with Bogarts is that he's coming off of like a really good, like he's probably coming off maybe his best season in terms of like wins above replacement total value, but didn't hit for power. Right. And he was a great defender, but you buy into it, right? He's a curious case of how much you buy into his defense. Cause if he's genuinely like a good defender now, I could see him in Philly. I could totally see that, but I think they want Bogarts. Turner more.
I don't know. I think they're going to go for Turner. And,
yeah.
You know, I'd be very surprised if they signed two. But it's Dave Dombrowski up there. They could do anything.
They also have a lot of money already committed to 2020, 2023.
Oh, they have
already.
So much money committed.
So they don't have a lot of money coming off the books.
And that was a huge thing. That was a huge narrative throughout the playoffs. That, like, the Phillies were some, you know, surprise team who, you know, didn't spend as much as the Astros or whatever. And, you know, they were like defying the odds when they had $100 million more in payroll than Houston did.
Yeah. They were defying the odds in the sense that they were an incompetently run team and they somehow the won. Series. Right. Like, I'm not trying to put down Dombrowski too much because there is something to be said about being, you know,
aggressive.
Spending a lot of money.
He's super aggressive. And that's something that will, you know, even if it's not the most, it's the same thing with the Mets. Maybe they're not the most analytically sound organizations, but they're so aggressive and they spend so much money that it doesn't fucking matter.
I think the difference is I think I trust the Mets to like draft. I don't trust the Phillies to draft for shit.
The Phillies made the World Series and I still think they're a horribly ran organization.
Oh, I 100% agree. But Dombrowski also, from a lot of reports, like the people in the organization that he brings on are typically pretty good. He establishes a pretty good work environment.
Faults.
No, I mean, like, how do I put this?
He
like
won in Boston. You know, wasn't he with the Marlins when they won too?
I believe so. He was also with those Tigers teams that were very competitive. In that like Miguel Cabrera, JD Martinez, Victor Martinez, Verlander, Scherzer, Price. That kind. Not Price wasn't a part of those, but that you get what's happening.
Yeah, those Tigers teams about. That
those
probably should have
teams.
Won at some
yeah.
point.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, yeah, but I think as far as the shortstops go, Xander Bogaerts seems like a Boston lifer to me.
I think he goes back. I think the Red Sox are willing to bring him back. I think they are.
But then again, like, Red Sox fans, from what I saw, kind of turned against him at some point this year. I don't know why. I don't know what, like,
I think, well, it's because he was less of a power hitter and the Red Sox struggled with hitting home runs. I believe JD Martinez also didn't hit as many home runs and they also didn't play well. And, you know, the one thing I will say to Red Sox fans, grass is always greener on the other side, right? Yes, you can want a new shortstop, and I understand that. I understand wanting a Correa over Bogarts. Totally get that. 100% get that. But you shouldn't be upset if you bring back Bogarts, especially since I think he's going to get less money than Correa, and especially if they go out and splurge on other positions. Here's the thing. They need a shortstop. It can't be Trevor Story. Trevor Story is a worse shortstop than Xander Bogarts is. His arm is not good anymore, right? So you cannot put him at shortstop. He won't be able to play deep. He has great range, which is great, but his throwing arm is just not, it's not there. He's a great defensive second. Yeah, he's a great defensive second baseman. You keep him there. And also, Story's not a better hitter than Bogarts. I think that's also true. I think there's a chance that Story rebounds next year as he adjusts to life without Coors Field and, you know, fastballs that have a little more vertical break to them. But do you want to bank on that more than you want to bank on a guy who's a 120 to 130 WRC plus hitter every year? You know what I mean? Well, Story wasn't even a 130 WRC plus hitter consistently in Colorado. So how much are we banking on? I just don't think it's a right move to leave Story at shortstop. Story's a great second baseman. Keep him at second base. He could be a 5-WAR player there because he's such a good defender.
Right. But, I agree with you.
You know what I mean? So, and it's okay to pay a second baseman a lot of money. That's okay. If they're really good, it doesn't matter what position you're investing in. So if Bogart stays, it's not the end of the world for them. It really isn't. Now, would you like to have someone else like Correa because you can move, you know, you can keep Correa there for a longer period of time defensively? Absolutely. But again, I don't see a reason for Boston to be opposed to signing him, if you get what I'm saying. But I do think Bogarts would benefit from playing for a team that could move him off the position in 2 years, which is interesting enough. The Yankees would be a great fit for Bogarts. If you think about it on paper, right? The Yankees could sign Bogarts.
Use him for now. And then when Volpe comes up.
Right, or even give Volpe some time at second base, and when Bogarts is not a good defender, you move him to third base or second base. But the Yankees are not signing Xander Bogarts, most likely.
No, no way.
I mean,
that feels so wrong.
It feels weird to put him in a Yankees uniform. I'm dying. Oh my God, okay. I would be very happy with him in a Yankee uniform because I think he's a good player, and I think the Yankees should want good players, and I'm definitely covering my ass by praising Bogarts in case the Yankees sign him, but... You know, I'm covering my ass with every free agent. I think the Yankees, they were linked to him. SNY linked the Yankees. They did actually touch base with him. But ultimately, I think, you know, Bogarts ends up back in Boston. Correa goes to Chicago. Turner ends up in Philly. I'm sure of this.
Yeah. The other thing I guess we didn't really talk about that I think is completely possible is that Xander Bogarts goes to LA.
Ooh, you're right. The Dodgers. You are correct.
That because they're going to lose Turner most likely unless they pay him, which I wouldn't Correa be surprised could if they also do. Go there. Correa's a Cub, though.
That is, I think it could be Turner to Chicago, Correa to LA. I could see Bogarts in Philly.
Maybe.
And Swanson, he could also end up in Minnesota. Minnesota also likes Swanson. So if they don't end up with Correa, they would have to be aggressive for a shortstop.
I think the Braves wouldn't have that much of a problem letting Swanson walk, just from what I've seen and what I'm assuming.
And there are some reports that Adames might be moved. So do you think Adames gets moved if a team that wants a shortstop doesn't get one of the top ones and is
like if they miss out? I mean, I don't know, because I feel like Adames is just as good as Swanson.
Right. But maybe he could be better. He could be better because
Swanson's glove is just so much better than Adames's, though. That
it feels like it's weird. It's a weird situation.
Yeah, I mean the shortstops are definitely the most interesting part of the free agent market this year. Again,
I think it's
it just feels like the Cubs and Phillies are going to get theirs, and it's just a matter of where the other ones end up.
Yeah, and also you know. With shortstops, it's much more top heavy. If you don't end up with a top guy, you're kind of fucked situation. Unless you have like the Yankees were fucked when they didn't get a top shortstop, right? The Cubs.
The other thing is like we're talking about these teams that are guaranteed to get shortstops. But if you look at their rosters, like every team that we've mentioned except for Chicago would be fucked. But I just don't know if actually I take that back. I know you can say. You know, the Cubs don't get a shortstop and they're fine because they have Nico Horner, who's probably a top 10 shortstop in his own right.
Yeah, I don't think
Like, what's Philly doing if they don't get a shortstop? Edmundo Sosa? Bryson Stott? Maybe Stott will turn into something? I don't know.
Yeah, I think the way I look at it is like, how do I put this? Those top teams, like you mentioned, they need one. Like, the Yankees don't have to get one just because they were already committed to Peraza and Volpe, so whatever. It is what it is. And even if I'd like them to, it is what it is. I'm okay with this reality. As you mentioned, if Philly had a really good shortstop, do you think we're looking at a team that potentially has a World Series title, right? They struggled to hit in the postseason in those last two games.
I think the Astros probably still beat them.
Maybe. I mean, I'm just saying, like, you know, I feel like the Phillies are going to look at this offseason and say, we have Harper, who actually is hurt. So that's a little bit of a, you know, you have to have, you know, Schwarber and Castellanos, those signings. Castellanos looks like just such a terrible signing, but shortstop's the position that they can upgrade. They also let go of Segura. So they're going to need infield help regardless. I don't really think they can afford to not get a shortstop. They need a second baseman and a shortstop. You could say Bryson Stott.
I like Stott, but I don't think I like him as a shortstop, like, long-term.
Yeah, so you need an infielder at least, right? They're fucked if they don't get an infielder. I think the Dodgers could withstand, maybe withstand losing, not having a shortstop, just because if they upgrade other positions, just because they happen to have, you know, like, they could put Lux at shortstop, and is Lux going to be the worst thing in the world for them at shortstop?
Oh, no, absolutely not.
Right, you know, He was a 113 WRC plus hitter this year. He has, you know, one DRS and one outs above average last season. That was a very small sample. You know, he's a great defensive second baseman. So I think they prefer him at second base. He's got great on base skills. You know, he's a good contact guy. I think they're comfortable enough to say he's not the worst in the world. They have Taylor to play second. They have, you know, Muncy to play second if need be, and he can bounce back a little bit. They have Vargas, who can play third and is someone that is very exciting with his bat. You know, he's someone that they anticipate to get a lot of production from, you know. Would you look at the Braves and say if Vaughn Grisham is good enough, they can live without Swanson? Could you say that? Do you think that's reasonable? Yeah, I mean, he's a good player. He's projected a 111 WRC plus. His defense at second base sucks. His defense at shortstop will probably also suck, which is a little bit concerning. But for a year, not the worst thing in the world. I'm trying to think of other teams that are losing that could lose a shortstop. You'd have what? The Dodgers, the Braves, Boston, I don't think can live without a shortstop. I think they need an infielder at least. Arroyo and Story as your middle infield is not good. You need more. You know, you need they. These are teams. There are a lot of teams that could use a shortstop. There are a lot of even teams we haven't mentioned could use a shortstop. The Cardinals. Why aren't the Cardinals exploring that route? You know, Edmund's a great defensive shortstop. Don't get me wrong, but you could put him at second, have a shortstop, and move a guy like Brendan Donovan or Nolan Gorman and go get like a top flight starting pitcher. Right? You know, they could go out and get Pablo Lopez like this. They could go out and get Sean Murphy like this. And if they can,
and I think it's moves. I think Murphy might be the right guy. Maybe they'll sign Contreras. I've seen that, which I would hate. But
they could go out and do, you know, sign a shortstop, trade for Murphy.
But it makes a lot of sense. I think it makes a lot more sense for the Cardinals to just sign Contreras and go out and give up assets for Murphy, especially given that Contreras is not going to be super expensive on the open market. I don't think.
Yeah,
I don't know. But Contreras does have that pick attached to him.
Yeah, and also, like, I don't – okay. He's not a great defender. We know this, right? Like, we're aware of this. But he's also a ridiculous hitter. Like, it's
– his market's going to be interesting. He's a great hitter.
I mean, for a catcher, he's a ridiculous hitter, right? What was it? Let me just check. 132 WRC plus and a max exit velocity of 116.2 miles an hour. I mean, this is a guy who's – like, I think it sustains. I think this is legitimately a remarkably good baseball player offensively, if you get what I'm saying. Like, he doesn't have a high strikeout rate. His strikeout rate dipped a lot this season, which is really encouraging. I don't know if that's, you know, is I don't he chased a lot more this year, but his swinging strike rate actually remained the same. So I don't, but his called strike rate dropped a lot. That could be due to swinging a little bit more. Maybe, you know, that helps him a little bit. If he's striking out under 23% of the time and barreling up the baseball as much as he does, and, you know, he's hitting the ball as hard as he does, I mean, he's going to have year in and year out. I mean, he was a three war player in 113 games. Part of that's obviously because he's a catcher. Part of that is, you know, I don't think he'll play 113 games next year. I think he'll play a little bit more. Steamer projects him to be a three war player in 122 games. You know, I really find it hard to believe, to look at Wilson Contreras. I think he's going to be very underrated in this market. I do. I think a team is going to sign him. People are going to say, "Ha, look at them. They're stupid. They went out and signed a guy who can't frame that much." And Wilson
Contreras, I don't think people will say that except for like Twitter.
Yeah, but like it's my only perception of society is Twitter. So, I mean, you know.
Yeah. Is what, but I don't know. I feel like Contreras makes sense to a lot of teams. I thought him to the Astros made a lot of sense during the regular season, but Dusty Baker vetoed that, which is interesting.
I think a team with an open DH situation would be perfect here. Like, absolutely perfect here.
There's also the possibility, I wouldn't be surprised if we just signed it back.
Yeah, that could happen, especially since who's your catcher right now? Is it Yan Gomes?
Would be Yan Gomes, Miguel Maya.
I think
the Cubs are fine with having a shitty catcher next year, but at the same time, Contreras makes a lot of sense to just bring him back, maybe 2-3 year deal, $20 million a year.
Yeah, and also, like, you know,
like I'd give him 3 years, $60 million.
I the way I look at it with him is like, if you're the Cubs, why not explore it, right? Like, you don't have anything to lose. I think Amaya is going
to
have
things to lose, and that would be money. Dollars.
Yeah, but like the Cubs are going to be. I mean, if you make, I don't know, depends on how many years you commit.
But then again, the Cubs like next year are looking at a team. I think looking at a team that could, you know, with their lineup, they've got certain guys set, but it could look a lot different. And then the rotation is a lot deeper than I think a lot of people are realizing. Especially if Wisniewski can be a good major league pitcher. For a full season next year, which I have no doubt that he will be.
I think we also have to look at the fact that the Cubs are a team that is going to, they're going to shed $20 million after this season with Hayward coming off the books. So if Contreras, if you have 3 years of Contreras, and I think 3 to 4 years might be the window you get him at, right? I just have a hard time believing he's going to kill you so much. Do you have a set DH even, you know?
No,
like if he's rotating between catcher and DH and SMI.
Well, another thing is like even if he doesn't live up to his standard, what you expect, $20 million for Wilson Contreras isn't going to turn into a Jason Hayward contract.
He can hit. That's the situation. He can hit. So
like even if he's not, you know, the same hitter, even if he's a 110 WRC plus hitter instead of whatever he's at right now. What was he at? 120, 125, but. I don't know. I just trust him to be able to hit enough that he'll make that contract worth it.
Yeah. And on top of that, you know, as you mentioned with the pitching, Wisniewski is absolutely phenomenal. I am very, very excited to see how Wisniewski is able to do over a full season. Justin Steele's a great pitcher. He's someone who is going to push, you know, the top 30 of a lot of starting pitcher lists.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Justin,
I don't know.
Steele.
Yeah, I thought my computer froze. It did not, so you can still merge all that matters. Justin Steele is going to be he's going to push a lot of top 30 starting pitcher lists. And we're going to see a lot of progress. I think Stroman's going to pitch a lot better next year. And if not, what he gave you this year isn't bad. Wisniewski, Stroman, you know, a full season of Steele in that conversation if they sign a starter. You know, I could see them in the market for Rodon. I think Rodon will make a lot of sense for the Cubs just based on, you know, power pitcher, big strikeout arm. The Cubs could need, I think the Cubs need some more strikeouts in that rotation, that pitching staff in general. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Like, with strikeouts, right now it's kind of, you know, Wisniewski's a good strikeout pitcher, I guess. Steele. But these guys are ground ball pitchers for the most part. Stroman. So, I don't know. I think the Cubs will be in the market for that. But Senga could be the guy for them.
He could be. You know, I'm very...
I don't know. It just seems like a perfect fit to me.
No, that's totally fair. I mean, I'm really curious to see how that plays out, that entire situation with their free agency. They are going to be they're going to be a mover in this market, if you get what I'm saying. They're going to determine a lot of outcomes for a lot of other teams because they're going to be aggressive. They're going to spend quite a bit. They're involved in a lot of big free agents. they're going to move the market. You know, they're going to be the team. They're going to be a team, not the team. I think the Mets and the Dodgers will play as big of a role, if not bigger. But they're going to play a huge factor into how different situations go out. You know, they could drive up the price for some of the shortstops. They could push some teams out of contention for a shortstop. They could blow Rodon out of the water with an offer. They can, you know, blow Senga out of the water with an offer. They could disrupt the catching situation if they bring back Contreras. They could go out and trade for a guy like Sean Murphy, right? They can do a lot of things that would very much change the landscape of the market for a lot of teams. So I think they're going to be big players in this market. I think the Mets are, the Dodgers are. I wonder if the Yankees are. I think Judge is their big signing. I guess that is a big play. You know, that kind of does shift the market a lot.
Absolutely. What are you talking about?
I guess it's more so because...
It's the biggest play.
I guess, but I mean, the way I see it is like, how do I put it? I think Judge is the most likely guys to return. If you
I also
saying.
Don't think that Judge... I don't think very many teams' plans are contingent on Judge. Whereas, like, a lot of teams will be, like, those shortstops, where one of them signs affects 10, 15 teams.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm getting
Whereas,
at
like,
here.
Where Judge signs doesn't really matter to anyone except for New York and San Francisco.
Right. Where, like, I don't think the suitors are necessary. Like, how do I put it? If you're a team and you're like, you know, I'm going to explore the market for Trey Turner. I think that's different than saying I'm going to explore the market for Aaron Judge. I think you can't explore the market for Aaron Judge. Aaron Judge is not a guy who's going to be like, I got him on the buy low. You know what I mean?
Right.
Whereas you can say one of the shortstops perhaps had their market fall a little bit, you know? And because of this, you know, the Yankees or let's say the Cubs maybe swooped in and got Turner instead of Correa because they pivoted and, you know, Turner was the last guy left. Or maybe, you know, even Bogarts. You could see a world where the Yankees get Bogarts because his market isn't as strong as it should be, or a lot of teams aren't comfortable throwing him at shortstop. That's a realistic situation. Or the Giants, right? The Giants are like, we swooped in and got him because the other teams in the market weren't, you know, as aggressive for him. These are realistic situations. I don't think these are unrealistic situations, if you get what I'm saying.
Right.
So,
yeah, I mean, I definitely think that these are all things that could happen. I wouldn't be surprised by any of them. Yeah, I think we can wrap it up there.
Yeah.
Thank you, everyone, for listening, and we will see you in episode 76.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.